In my last talk here at UU, I spoke about the roots of loneliness and spiritual longing and alienation. Today, I will explore the human soul as part of our UU Durango series on the soul. I don't have an intellectual or scientific interest in the idea of soul. Rather, I have a sense of it in my body, for whenever I lose connection with my soul, I get a physical sense of melancholy, I feel some fear, and I feel lost. Those are the signs for me that I need to slow down, even stop, get physically still, quiet my mind, and turn my attention within. What's the difference between soul, spirit, and heart? They're often used interchangeably, but they are not the same. Let's look at some of the suffixes we attach to these three words in the English language, as that may give us a sense of their difference. Heartfelt, spirited, soulful. Would you right now, sitting as you are, close your eyes? Let your arms and hands or finger point to the place or area in or around where you feel spirit exists. Do that now. Keeping your eyes closed or cast downward, now point to the place or area where you feel your soul exists, if you even feel it exists at all. Now let your eyes open. Raise your hands if, for you, spirit implies up and out. For how many of you did you find yourself looking or even feeling yourself go down and inward for the soul? Even more interesting than where it's located, assuming it even exists, is whether soul, like the concept of God, exists full-blown and always the same, or whether it's something that grows, and whether it pre-exists, are being conceived into a body, and or continues beyond our physical death. I equate the soul with our innermost depths, a descent or journey downward into water, into dark, deep, and dark waters full of mystery. And I, like many who've written eloquently about the soul, associated with the deep feminine dimension of both men and women. Some of us were dragged into these deep, dark waters of the soul early in life through personal pain and loss. A parent dies slowly or suddenly, and we witness and experience a horror. For others, it comes later when we go to war, or have a brush with or come face to face with our own death. For some, these experiences are where we discover our soul. For others, it feels as if we've been cut off from our very essence. Poet-translator Stephen Mitchell, in his foreword to a book by Jungian psychotherapist John Tarrant called The Light Inside the Dark, wrote that the soul craves depth, darkness, embodiment, the poetry and turmoil of the world, and that the cravings of the spirit are a hunger for light, purity, birth and deathlessness, and the dazzle of true insight. As Tarrant, spiritual life was shaped by English literature, the Catholic Mass, and the Australian Aboriginal culture, and he now teaches meditation to physicians. He says, beneath or inside the life we lead every day is another life that runs like a river beneath the city, beneath work, family, ambition, beneath our pleasures and griefs. This interior life of ours is often subjugated or paved over, slumbers until it's called forth. But beneath this life, or within our ordinary life, is irrepressible, unstoppable. It comes up in loveliness like jonquils out of the fallen snow. It rises in supplication like hands out of gratings in a pavement in India. And it bursts upward through our chests as the fountain of shock that is our reaction to evil news, he says. It appears in dreams, reverie, memories of childhood and what we find beautiful and what we find ugly, and appears when we fall in love, when we fall ill, when we are lost on dark paths. It touches our pleasures with melancholy and intermittently pierces our desperation with sheer joy. Soul is not the same as spirit. He writes, through attentiveness to spirit, we enter a place of reverence and see that woman, river, wind, and star are all equal, and that death and life are both dreamlike processes, themselves a part of a greater unchangingness. The experience of spirit is natural, and most people have had a taste of it. The dimension of spirit is the most wonderful thing there is, and yet alone it is strangely helpless. Spirit gives us perhaps the foundation for understanding reality, but is of little help with the day-to-day arts of relishing life. Spirit wants only to ascend, to be pure. It lacks melancholy and everything voluptuous. But there's a second impulse, he writes, simultaneous within and contradictory to the first, and it takes us toward the little and the disregarded, the valley world that is lovely, seductive, transient, destructive of our illusions and also of our wisdom, not the life eternal, but the life that we die of. It loves the sound of rain and the smell of basil. It stands at the foot of the bed, feeling the heart enlarge before the space of the sleeping child. That part of us touches and is touched by the world. Though through soul, we connect with each other and are made less lonely in a tangible human way. Soul falls headlong into matter. It likes to merge. It obsesses and broods. It is with our souls that we truly inhabit our lives, tasting the fresh black coffee so delicious and the kiss so brief and full of consequences. Soul brings meaning to experience. It does not abolish the difficulty of our lives, but brings music to our pains. Its gift is to make us less perfect and more whole. So we might say that soul is the truest part of us, our essential nature as an individual. Now, many tribal peoples, by the way, have no term in their language for individual because everything is collective and interrelated and interdependent. Isn't that precisely what modern physics and biology now teach? I think of the Bioneers movement. That's biological pioneers, which started in 1990 near Santa Fe, putting on international conferences, now 6,000 people strong, in one Frank Lloyd Wright-built auditorium, and tens of thousands of others around the world seeing it through space bridges and holding their own workshops, like in Boulder. People from all sorts of disciplines and all over the world involved in exploring the nature of the horrific problems that beset us and leading-edge solutions based in biological principles and biomimicry. An early tagline of the Bioneers conferences states, "It's all alive, it's all related, and it all matters." Now, with the new evidence coming in every year from various sciences, physics, astronomy, neuroscience, that's more true than we ever imagined. But whether we feel ourselves to be a separate individual or part of a whole, we experience our soul most deeply, I suggest, through our physical senses and not through abstract thoughts. Societies too have a soul, soul purpose, and unique nature in temperament. Ireland, England, Russia, in the minds of many, are old soul nations. As Big Sur poet Robinson Jeffers described Ireland as the old, wet, worn-out womb of the world. Compare that to a U.S. soul, young, brash, aggressive, arrogant. Well, for some of us, nothing quite expresses a concept like music. So let me play for you an excerpt from a piece of music, which for me is a call to my soul. You might close your eyes, cast them downward, and allow this piece to bathe you or flow through you. It's from Song for Ireland, sung by Mary Black.
She is quite good looking, and that's the best of all. And that's the best of all. And that's the best of all. Loving Hannah, come give to me your hand. You said if you'd marry, that I would be the one.
A song to the land. In the early 1970s, a young city-born and bred naturalist, Annie Dillard, wrote a book about her observations about a creek near where she lived in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia called Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. It was a universe she found paradoxically exquisite and fresh, morbid and grotesque, full of the spiritual energy of nature, and she expressed it with awe and reverence for it all. I am no scientist, she said. I explore the neighborhood. An infant who has just learned to hold his head up has a frank and forthright way of gazing about him in bewilderment. She hasn't the faintest clue where she is, and she aims to learn. Well, I walk out. I see something. Some event that would otherwise have been utterly missed and lost. Or something sees me, and some enormous power brushes me with its clean wing, and I resound like a struck bell. You don't run down the present, pursue it with baited hooks and nets. You wait for it, empty-handed, and you are filled. And she wrote about stalking nature. It's astonishing how many people cannot or will not hold still. I could not hold still for 30 minutes inside or 30 seconds. But at the creek, I slow down, center down, empty. I'm not excited. My breathing is slow and regular. I retreat, not inside myself, but outside myself, so that I am a tissue of senses. Whatever I see is plenty, abundance. I am the skin, the water, the wind plays over. I am a petal, feather, stone. And I cannot, in all honesty, call the world old when I have seen it new. I am a frayed and nibbled survivor in a fallen world. I am not washed and beautiful, but wandering awed on a splintered wreck. I've come to care for those bloodied and scarred creatures. They are my dearest companions, whose beauty beats and shines not in its perfections, but overwhelmingly in spite of them. And when called to, Annie takes action. For the soul does that. I saw a monarch butterfly walking across a gas station lot walking south, and I placed my finger in its path, and it clambered aboard and let me lift it to my face. Its wings were faded but unmarked, by hazard. It was male. His legs clutched my fingers, and they were short and atrophied, and I knew that those feet were actually tasting me, sipping with sensitive organs, the vapor of my fingers' skin. Butterflies taste with their feet. I leaned closer. I could barely scent a sweetness. He smelled like honeysuckle. I had read a list of improbable scents of butterflies. Sandalwood, chocolate, sweet pea, an odor only half remembered, a breath of the summer past. I walked him across the gas station lot and lowered him into a field. And he took to the air, and I lost him. For me, the comfort and soul-filled emotion I find in these examples comes from the sense that I am not alone in my feelings about life. My husband Bob offered me this thought, that the soul wants to know itself, and to do that, it tests both our external and internal reality. It's part of the inherent nature of the soul, he says. And he reminded me that while others can and sometimes do reflect our soul back to us, there comes a time in most people's lives when our soul needs to know itself directly, and at that time, we naturally turn our attention inward. It's often accompanied by losing interest in things we used to be very interested in, such as social activities and forms of entertainment. As he says, it may help to understand soul by looking for a moment at where soul doesn't show itself. In the men who created the plans for the ovens in the concentration camps. In the collective insanity of the groups that call itself Islamic State. And in the plans and actions of the U.S. that helped create ISIS. And in the boardrooms of big corporations looking at how they can sell more of a product like Roundup to every homeowner and farmer, or expand their market for cigarettes to young kids in Southeast Asia. There's certainly no soul showing where we are poisoning our Mother Earth and our children's brains and lungs. In modern society, turning toward, paying attention to, and growing our soul may not be a matter of conversation, but it is a natural process that comes with serious illness, depression, aging, often starting around our early 50s and 60s. How do we know we're consciously connected with our soul? Well, there are many ways, mostly small, modest ways. And one hint, when we are connected to the soul, our soul, or the soul of the world, we don't feel lonely. James Hillman, a psychologist, scholar, and author of The Soul Code, wrote, "Each person bears a uniqueness that asks to be lived. Each person enters the world called. To live with our soul," he urges us to go beyond the facts of our lives, beyond our personal story. "The more my life," he says, "is accounted for by what already occurred in my chromosomes, by what my parents did or didn't do, and by my early years, now long past, the more biography is the story of a victim. The current American identity," he says, "as victim, is the tail side of the American coin, whose head brightly displays the opposite identity, the heroic, self-made man, carving out destiny alone and with unflagging will." Interesting. A young soul nation that conquered and attempted to destroy all the indigenous peoples of this land. In a healthy, well-functioning tribe, as in a healthy, well-functioning family, neighborhood, and community, each person and the entire group feel personally responsible for the soul of each child and adult and the gift they came to bring. Collectively, we need to form that matrix or mother so that each child is raised to feel it is essential and important to the whole, that they bring a unique gift necessary for the very survival and well-being of us all, that they belong to this earth, that they have a sense of place. Tara Brock, a teacher at the Insight Meditation Center in Washington, D.C., is one of my revered teachers, whose talks on podcasts bring me back to the innate wholeness and sanity of my body and the felt sense of being fully alive and connected to my soul. As she said in one of her podcasts about the value of the unpleasant things we may feel in our body, I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile, the high blood pressure, your lack of trust, your agitation and fatigue. You tend to disown me, suppress me, ignore me. You really want me to go away. Many times you're shocked by my arrival. But I implore you, I am a messenger with good news. As disturbing as I can be at times, I am wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. And if you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I'm a voice from your soul, calling you to you from places deep within that seek your conscious alignment. I may ask you to alter your diet, get more sleep or exercise, encourage you to see a vaster reality or attend to the wounds of your relationships. I might have you laugh more, spend more time in nature, eat when you're hungry and less when you're in pain or bored. Spend time every day for just a few minutes being still. I am your friend, not your enemy. I am simply tugging at your sleeve. You are a being so complex, so vast, with amazing capabilities. Let me lead you back to the mysterious core of your being, where insight and wisdom are naturally available when called upon with a sincere heart. And as Tara Brach says, our thoughts carry us away. Our longing takes us back home. Being connected to soul does not imply that we are disconnected from being engaged in making this world a better place. Known to many as Thay, the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who came to the U.S. from Vietnam to study comparative religions during the Vietnam War, was a delegate for the peace delegation, the Buddhist peace delegation at the Paris Peace Talks. He coined the term engaged Buddhism. That's Thich. And it was several of his monks and nuns in Vietnam who set themselves on fire as a horrific protest against the war. Many in the U.S. decried their acts as examples of how Asians just don't take life seriously. To the contrary, as Thay said, it was precisely because Buddhists value life above all that they chose to sacrifice their bodies for peace. As Thomas More, a former Catholic monk, psychotherapist, and writer on archetypes and Jungian psychology, mythology, and the arts, writes, we know intuitively that the soul has to do with genuineness and depth, and that it's tied to life in all its particulars, good food, satisfying conversation, genuine friends, and experiences that stay in the memory and touch the heart. The care of the soul is a sacred art, not tied to any particular religious tradition, but a recognition of our absolute need for a spiritual life. So you can see how soul and spirit are like the front and back of the gold coin of our realm. He says, the emotional complaints of our time, we therapists hear every day, include emptiness, meaninglessness, vague depression, disillusionment about marriage, family, relationship, work, a loss of values, yearning for personal fulfillment and a hunger for spirituality, and they all reflect a loss of soul, and they let us know what soul craves. Life lived soulfully is not without its moments of darkness and periods of foolishness. Self-knowledge and self-acceptance are the very foundation of soul, but soul is nothing like ego. We can cultivate, tend, enjoy, and participate in the things of the soul, but we cannot outwit it or manage it or shape it to the signs of a willful ego. Care of the soul is inspiring. Its goal is not to make our life problem-free, but to give ordinary life the depth and value that come with soulfulness. In the care of the soul, we have both the task and the pleasure of organizing and shaping our lives. So I'm going to close with a very short piece of wisdom from the Bantu people in Africa. It's said to be a tradition that fathers there whisper in the ear of each of their sleeping children, "Be who you are." It is my hope that from some of what I've shared with you today, you each may find a deeper connection to your soul, your true nature. Thank you.